हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा 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 हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा 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 हरे हरे Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai Shri Jagannath Shri Baladev Shri Mati Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai Shri La Prabhupada Ki Jai Ganantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhuttanaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Bhastaja Deshatanine. So today we're going to be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 18, Lord Balaram Slays the Demon Palamba. And we're going to cover the first seven texts, and text number two is on the board. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now, can everybody see the board okay? Like 90% of the persons are sitting on this side of the room, so do we need to move the board on that side, or... Everyone's okay. Yeah, as long as you can see the board. Okay, so first I'm going to myself chant through text number one, and then we'll do text number two responsively. So, text one. Shri Shuka Uvacha Atta Krishna Paribritto Gyatibir Muditatmabi Anugiya Manon Yavishad Rajam Gokula Manditam. Shukadev Goswami said, surrounded by his blissful companions who constantly chanted his glories, Sri Krishna then entered the village of Raj, which was decorated with herds of cows. Why does it say Sri Krishna then entered the village of Raj? Where was he? What was going on? That now he's entering the village of Raj. Where is he, Daniel? Yeah, so the residents of Vrindavan were not actually in the village at the time. Why were they all congregated at the banks of the Yamuna? Why weren't they at home in the village with their cows and their kids and their whatever? Why were they all congregating on the Yamuna River? I can't hear. Yeah, because Kaliya was about to seemingly swallow up Krishna, and Nanda Maharaj came running, everybody came running, and big drama as we finished reading in the last chapter, culminating with the swallowing of the forest fire. I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that says that Kaliya, he's a demon, right? Such a certain extent. Anyway, that he had friends. And so this fire was actually a friend of Kaliya's that came to try to get a little revenge on Krishna. So Kaliya had poisoned the lake within the Yamuna, and Krishna's Sakas, his friends, and their cows were going to get poisoned by that water. And Krishna came obviously to save them, and he subdued Kaliya. But the nature of demons is that if one of us loses, well, another one of us will jump in and try to finish the mission. So this forest fire came, and it said that this fire was actually a friend of Kaliya's to come and try to finish Krishna off and finish his friends off. So Krishna effortlessly swallowed that forest fire, and now they're all entering. Krishna is now entering Vraj, surrounded by his companions who are constantly chanting his glories. So now we'll go to text two. Please repeat. Vraje Vikridator Evam. Vraje Vikridator Evam. Gopala Chadma Gopala Chadma Grishmo na martur abhavan. Grishmo na Nati preyan Nati preyan Vraje Vikridator Evam Gopala Chadma Mayaya Krishmo Namartaba Please chant. Vraje Vikridator Evam Gopala Chadma Mayaya Vishmo Namartur Gopala Chadma Mayaya Krishmo Namatur Abhavan Nati Preyan Charirinam Vraje Vikridatorevam Gopala Chadma Mayaya Krishmo Namartur Abhavan Nati Preyan Charirinam Anybody else? Rajivikritakarevam Gopala Chadnamaya Krishmana Marturabhavan Nati Priyan Charirinam. Word for word synonyms, please retreat. Repeat. Praje in Vrindavan. Vikridato. While the two of them were sporting. Evam. In this way. Gopala. As cowherd boys. Chadma. Of the disguise. Maya, by the illusion, Grishma, summer, Nama, thus designated, Ritu, the season, Abhavat, came about, Na, not, Atiprayan, very much favored. Sharirinam, by embodied beings. Translation. While Krishna and Balaram were thus enjoying life in Vrindavan in the guise of ordinary cowherd boys, the summer season gradually appeared. This season is not very pleasing to embodied souls. Probably have some experience of that this summer, right? When you don't have central air conditioning. Those of you who are embodied souls were not enjoying the summer season. Purport in Volume 1, Chapter 18 of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada comments as follows, quote, the summer season in India is not very much welcomed because of the excessive heat, but in Vrindavan, everyone was pleased because summer there appeared just like spring. End of quote. Text number 3. Nevertheless, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally staying in Vrindavan along with Balaram, summer manifested the qualities of spring. Such are the features of the land of Vrindavan. Text 4. In Vrindavan, the loud sound of waterfalls covered the crickets' noise, and clusters of trees constantly moistened by spray from those waterfalls beautified the entire area. Purport this and the following three verses describe how Vrindavan manifested the features of spring, even during the summer season. Text 5. The wind, wafting over the waves of the lakes and flowing rivers, carried away the pollen of many varieties of lotuses and water lilies, and then cooled the entire Vrindavan area. Thus the residents there did not suffer from the heat generated by the blazing summer sun and seasonal forest fires. Indeed, Vrindavan was abundant with fresh green grass. Text 6. With their flowing waves, the deep rivers drenched their banks, making them damp and muddy. Thus the rays of the sun, which were as fierce as poison, could not evaporate the earth's sap or perch its green grass. Text 7. Flowers beautifully decorated the forest of Vrindavan, and many varieties of animals and birds filled it with sound. The peacocks and bees sang, and the cuckoos and cranes cooed. I'll stop there and resume on text 8 tomorrow. So this is the first 7 texts of this chapter, Balaram slays the demon Pralamba, and we're hearing a beautiful description of the environment. Krishna and his friends have entered the village of Vraj. And it's explained that this village is no ordinary village. It's extremely beautiful, filled with cows. But now the summer season has come. So generally summer means excessive heat, and we all like to complain that it's too hot, it's too humid, the grass is turning yellow, there's not sufficient water. But a very interesting thing is happening here. It's said here that, nevertheless, because Krishna was personally staying in Vrindavan, along with Balaram, summer manifested the symptoms of spring. Spring is like everybody's favorite season. So what is this Vrindavan? How does it differ from other localities, say, in the universe? The unique feature of Vrindavan is that everybody and everything, animate or inanimate, is dedicated to the loving service of Krishna. The gopis, the gopas, the animals, the trees, the flowers, the water, the earth, the wind, everything has as its only purpose to please Krishna. So even the inanimate objects like the wind and the water adjust themselves for Krishna's pleasure. So here we're reading how all the different senses of Krishna were being served. What is devotional service? We all talk about devotional service. We go out and preach that in our religion, we teach devotional service, not just armchair philosophy or idol worship. One time somebody challenged Srila Prabhupada. He saw the deities at the temple. And he said, "Ooh, you guys are involved in idol worship." I-D-O-L, idol worship. And Prabhupada said, "Well, that's better than your idol worship, I-D-L-E. Get it? Idol. Right? 99.99% of what's going on in the world in the name of spirituality and religion and even bhakti. Like, there's a big bhakti movement out there. Right, is idol worship, I-D-L-E. Because the inconvenient truth, there's a big elephant in the room. There's a huge inconvenient truth that people have to deal with. And you know what that inconvenient truth is? God is a person. God forbid. I mean, goodness forbid. God is a person. So what does that mean? He's a person. It means he has senses. The sense of sight, the sense of hearing, the sense of smell, the sense of taste, the sense of touch. He has a mind. He has an intellect. He has an ego, etc. So what is devotional service? We go out and we tell people, we're not engaged in idol worship. of the statues at the temple. We're doing what's called devotional service. You guys are involved in what's called idol worship, I-D-L-E. So what is devotional service? In a nutshell, if you had to tell somebody you just went out on book distribution, Harinam Sankirtan, or something, you're just going grocery shopping, somehow you're interacting with somebody in the public who is not familiar with Krishna consciousness, and you are trying to explain to them that you're following a path of not just sectarian or materially motivated mundane religiosity, but the path of devotional service. So what is devotional service in a nutshell? If you had to say it like in one sentence, what does that mean? To do devotional service. God-motivated service. Well, people say like that. I'm motivated by God to open a hospital. I'm motivated by God to be philanthropic. I'm motivated by God to do, you know, food relief programs for hurricane victims or something. Dr. Alex, what would you say? I'm not putting you on the spot, but just what would you say if somebody asked in a nutshell, like one sentence, what is devotional service?
I would try to describe to them one of the nine processes.
The nine processes of devotional service. Okay. Although that is true. You're completely correct. The nine angas of bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, etc. But they still have a underlying mission behind them. Back to Adam, what would you say?
I would say to perform our activities to please Krishna's senses in a favorable mood.
Thank you. This is the definition of devotional service, to serve the senses of Krishna. Everything we do 24/7 is about sense gratification. But whose senses are we gratifying? If you're gratifying your own senses or the senses of a loved one or a stranger or whatever, that's material. That's a karmic activity. That is based on kama or lust, desire. But sense gratification for Krishna, gratifying the senses of Krishna, that is devotional service. So the nine angas of devotional service, Alex, that you were alluding to, is exactly, those are the nine ways, primary ways of pleasing Krishna's senses, right? But in a nutshell, as Adam said, to somehow or other, please the senses of Krishna. So here in Vraj, why are we hearing, oh, there's little birdies flying around and butterflies and flowering trees and fruit-bearing trees and a nice breeze and waterfalls? I mean, I thought we were supposed to be reading a book of the highest philosophy, right? Didn't you all come here because you're attracted to, like, the highest philosophy that can be found? And we're sitting here reading cute little descriptions of flowers and birdies and, yeah. Why is that? Because here we are in the 10th canto, and we're directly in the 10th canto. What's being highlighted? Okay, Krishna's pastimes, yes. But what's being highlighted by highlighting Krishna's pastimes? What's really being glorified in the 10th canto? Dr. Daniel.
Be the devotees exactly. Of Raj, their service attitude.
Exactly. We have nine cantos discussing different avatars of Krishna, different devotees of the Lord. Some of them are Mishra Bhaktas. Mishra means, what does Mishra mean? Mixed. You mix your salty food with the sweet food. You know, some people like to do that, just stir everything up and eat it like that. So Mishra means mixed. So throughout the Bhagavatam, we're learning about many devotees, but some of them are Mishra Bhaktas. They've mixed their bhakti with jnana, karma, yoga. But when we come to the 10th canto, now bhakti is being highlighted in its purest, pristine form. This is, 10th canto is only discussing Ananya Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti. All means pure, unalloyed means unmixed. It's pure gold. It's not mixed with some brass and some silver and whatever. It's unalloyed bhakti. So it took us 9 cantos to appreciate the Lord, to appreciate the process of bhakti, to come to this 10th canto where only pure bhakti is being highlighted. And how is pure bhakti being highlighted? By highlighting the devotees. Because the devotees are the reservoirs of bhakti. We were hearing last night that Radharani is the highest abode. She is the abode of bhakti. She's the original bhakti devi. So she's the ashraya. Ashraya means the shelter or reservoir. So Radharani is the reservoir of bhakti, the source, you could say, of bhakti. And Krishna is the Vishaya. Vishaya, what does Vishaya mean? Do we recognize that word from Bhagavad Gita? Alex? Yeah, so what does that word Vishaya mean?
I just know it's the verse about having a high taste. I don't know the
term. Yeah. So it's important to know basically what each word means. Vishaya means the object, the sense object. Like the Vishaya of the eye would be, you know, a piece of art or something. The Vishaya of the ear is maybe some music. The sense object. So that in that verse, Vishaya Vinivartante, one can't give up sense objects. Things that we see and hear and taste and smell, material sense objects, vishaya, unless we get a higher taste, param drishtva. Then you can give up those lower objects. So what is that object? We're not asking people to just go cold turkey and drop all your sense objects and just walk around without engaging your senses. Be blind, be deaf, lose your sense of smell and sense of taste and sense of touch and just be like a stone. No, we're saying replace the sense objects with a higher sense object. Replace the sense gratification with a higher sense gratification. So that's Krishna. He's the Vishaya. Krishna is the actual object of bhakti. The eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the skin, sense of touch are all meant for satisfying his senses. So here we are in the 10th canto, and it's not just the devotees in human form, the gopas and the gopis, that are being glorified, but even the land of Vrindavan is being glorified. The waterfalls, the Chintamani dust, the butterflies, the birds. So here's the summer. It's hot. It's, you know, being parched. The land's being parched, etc. So what is Vrindavan doing to please the Lord? The residents, the parts of Vrindavan, if you will. So here's what's happening. waterfalls are coming. And they're covering the sound of the crickets, because crickets are very loud in the summer. So people don't like the sound of crickets because it reminds them that we're in the heat of the summer. So the waterfalls are making lots of nice sound, covering the sound of the crickets, giving persons the impression that, the monsoon season is upon us. The trees are constantly moistened by the spray from those waterfalls. The wind is carrying the aroma of lotus flowers. To serve Krishna's sense of smell, the wind picks up the pollen from the lotus flowers, carries them to the nostrils of Krishna. Right? And the particles of water carried by the wind were very cooling. The animals and birds and the bees and the peacocks made beautiful sounds in the village of Raj to please Krishna's sense of hearing. So in this way, there's nothing in Vrindavan except pleasing Krishna's senses. So we may think, well, I don't want to just please somebody else's senses. I want to please my own senses. And this is our disease. This is actually our disease, is that we don't appreciate or understand that my only position is to please the senses of Krishna. It's not like a relationship in this world. In this world, I please the senses of my beloved with the often unspoken or even unconscious desire that they will in turn please the senses, my senses. You know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. And if I find that this relationship is a one-way street, I'm delivering to you, I'm serving your senses, but I'm not getting anything in return. See you later, alligator, right? I'm not going to stay in that relationship for very long. If I'm a saintly person, I might tolerate it for a good long time. But deep down inside, when I get together with my other friends, I'm complaining. Oh, he never reciprocates with me. She never talks to me. They don't give me any attention. So we can't expect to find selfless love in this world. And indeed, we're never going to be satisfied by doing selfless love in this world. Meaning that another human being or mundane object is the object of my selfless love. There's many people out there who talk about selfless love. We have to practice selfless love. But guess what? That is false advertising that you're going to be happy by doing selfless love. It might be it's certainly a step above selfishness. But it's often just an extended form of selfishness, a covert form of selfishness. And the object of my selfless love is not qualified to be the object of selfless love. Therefore, I can't be actually satisfied. So our only satisfaction comes when we come to this understanding that Krishna is the object of selfless love. He is the perfect Vishaya. And I'm not the Ashraya. What do I have to offer Krishna? I'm not the reservoir of love. But Radharani's the reservoir of love. So one becomes a pure devotee when Radharani bestows upon that soul her bhakti shakti. One cannot become a pure devotee by their own efforts. I'm going to be selfless. I'm going to give love to Krishna. I'm going to satisfy Krishna's senses. To what extent can we do that? What do we have to offer? Just a bunch of mechanical, external actions and words and thoughts. But if we become favored by Radharani, then she bestows upon the living entity her bhakti shakti, so that we can reflect that to Krishna in a relationship. Therefore, all the religions of the world, and we don't say this to be like critical or condemning or holier than thou, but just as an objective truth, that all the religions of the world which teach you that you should love God, you should surrender to God, you should devote your life to God, you should love God, they're all incomplete and to some extent, perhaps to the full extent, cheating religion if they have negated, ignored Bhakti Devi. Here we have a male god. Okay, great. Here's a male god. Put a name on him. It doesn't matter because he's got infinite names. He doesn't have any names, actually. They're just adjectives that we put on him. Krishna is not really his name. It's an adjective, all attractive, by which we refer to him. So here's God, a male god. How are you going to love him? We're not the ashraya of love. Love is in Radharani. She's the ashraya of love. So without having Radharani in the picture, how are you going to please God? How are you going to please Krishna? It's not going to work. Right? You understand the point? So people say, oh, I love God, this, that, and the other thing. But they don't know what actual love of God is. Because they don't have a female aspect of God in their paradigm. And when you show them the Krishna book with the divine couple on the cover, they balk at the idea that God is a girlfriend or a wife or whatever you want to, you know, a consort. So Vrindavan then is that place where bhakti, which emanates from Radharani, she is the Hladini Shakti of Krishna, the pleasure potency of Krishna. Vrindavan is that place where bhakti is pure and unalloyed. So everything, from the people to the animals to the birds, do nothing but adjust themselves to please Krishna. Krishna walks into the forest, everybody's on their toes, they completely adjust themselves to adjust to his mood. Oh, it's time for Krishna and the gopis to have Ras Lila. Oh, the sun will go away into another corner. The full moon will come and shine just to set the mood. It's time for Krishna to go to the forest. All the cows assemble. The forest is producing minerals and flowers and also many things for the boys to decorate themselves with. The rocks are there for them to make a plate to have their picnic on. The river is flowing. So we can't accept this philosophy until we accept that Parashya Shaktir Vividhaya Shruyate Swabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. The real definition or understanding of God is that he is replete with unlimited potencies. And all these potencies have only one purpose, and that is to serve his pleasure, to bring pleasure to him. So he has unlimited potencies that are basically categorized as jnana bala kriya. For bala meaning all powers, any kind of power or, you know, from physical strength, bodily strength, to beauty, to intellectual powers, the ability to control others, whatever, any kind of power, that's Krishna's Bala Shakti. Then you have the Jnana Shakti. Jnana means knowledge, being conscious of and aware, cognizant. And then Kriya means activity. So Krishna can do anything and understand anything and have any power we can imagine. How? By utilizing his shaktis. They are at his call. If Krishna thinks, I want something, like, whatever, mango ice cream. If we say, I want mango ice cream, we have to go pick some mangoes, cut them up, mash them up. We got to get the cream and the sugar and, however. It's a big ordeal to make ice cream. Of course, people just go to the store and pay $1.50 and get a quart of mango ice cream. But the real way to get ice cream is to go through the whole process, right? So when I say I want mango ice cream, it might take till, this evening for me to have mango ice cream manifested for my tongue to enjoy. But Krishna says, I would like some mango ice cream. As soon as his intention or his desire is there, it's the object of sense gratification is there. Because all his shaktis do nothing but serve him. He doesn't have to get up and pick a mango and do this and do that. And how is that manifested? Does it just fall out of the sky? No, but everybody and everything in Vrindavan is his shakti. So the residents of Vrindavan, they don't have to wait to hear Krishna say, I want some mango ice cream. They know what Krishna's desires are without him verbally expressing them. They just know how to please him. And Radharani's the topmost, knowing how to please Krishna. Everything Radharani does, Krishna likes. It pleases him. And everything Krishna likes, Radharani does that. There's no incongruity between what Krishna likes and wants and what Radharani does. So we're all meant to get on that page. And as we read here, even the trees and waterfalls and the wind and the birds are in that mood. So Krishna's got unlimited shaktis, one of them being his Leela Shakti. Leela means pastimes. So what's the Leela Shakti? The Leela Shakti is in charge of orchestrating, choreographing, providing the paraphernalia for Krishna's Leela. Whatever it is that Krishna wants to do. The Leela Shakti arranges for the paraphernalia to be available to Krishna's reach, that the personalities are there. So without understanding Krishna's, without understanding that God is full of all potencies, we can never take to devotional service properly. Because we happen to be one of those shaktis. Every single shakti, as we said earlier, has no purpose except to please Krishna. We happen to be one of those shaktis. Do you know the name of that shakti, Bhakta Adam, that we are? Such and we, the living entities, we are considered such and such shakti of Krishna. Do you know the name of that shakti?
I know that we're marginal.
Exactly, marginal potency. And the word marginal is tatashta. Tatashta means that line of demarcation. Like you go to the beach, where does the beach end and the water begin? There's a you can't really say, right? Because the waves are coming and going. It's like, where does the actual dry land stop and the water begin? That very thin imaginary line of demarcation is called the tata. So tatashta shakti, we're the marginal potency. Are we matter or are we spirit? It's like hard to tell sometimes because we're so, we can be, the point is we can become under the influence of either the bahiranga shakti, which means the external energy, or the antaranga shakti, which is Krishna's internal energy. So we're the tatashta shakti. So just like all the other shaktis, our only purpose is to please the senses of Krishna. So unless and until we understand that point, we can't actually do devotional service properly. So we'll stop there, see if there's any discussion. Dr. Alex?
Thank you. Kili Mataji, I have a question for you. Lately I've been studying our Vaishnava Acharya songbook, and I was reading one of Srila Prabhupada's prayers. I believe it's the prayer he wrote on the Jaladutta, and it's saying that, well, brothers, you can't like receive the mercy of Krishna unless you're favored by Srimati Radharani. And yesterday I was reading more prayers, and there's a pranam written to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and it was explaining how he is favored by Srimati Radharani, and that's something you mentioned in your class. And I was wondering, how do you like receive the favor? How do you become favored by Radha?
Okay, very good question. So Srila Prabhupada made a very excellent point that we cannot please Krishna if we haven't received the favor of Radharani. And indeed, his own spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Shri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata, his pranam mantra, in his pranam mantras, Bhakti Siddhanta's pranam mantras, we read like that. Shri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata, he is favored by Srimati Radharani. So now the question is, how do we, aspiring bhaktas, become favored by Radharani? We know we can't please Krishna without being favored by her, so how do we get her favor? Well, Prabhupada explains, the spiritual master is a representative of either Srimati Radharani or Nityananda Prabhu. So Prabhupada, like umpteen times, unlimited times, would always make this point that how do you know God is pleased? When your spiritual master is pleased. Just like he would say, how do you know the CEO of a company is pleased? When you please your immediate boss. You're some peon in a very big company, so you never see the CEO. So how do you know the CEO is pleased with your work? Well, if you satisfy your immediate boss, the supervisor or whatever, then that's guaranteed that the CEO is pleased. So we know Krishna is pleased when Radharani is pleased. How do we know Radharani's pleased? How do we know that we're getting her favor to please Krishna? By serving and pleasing the representative of Radharani, the spiritual master. Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru, so many gurus in our lives. It's not limited to one manifestation, right? Formal or informal gurus there are. So please an advanced devotee. If you can get the favor, I'm saying, of an advanced devotee, that is the sign that you're getting the favor of Radharani. Oh God, show me a sign. I need a sign that you're real. Well, what are we expecting for him to like a hand to come out of the clouds and shake hands with us or something? What is the sign that God is paying attention attention to us and answering our prayers, etc. Through his manifestations, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, we come in contact with the real Shastra. We come in contact with the real Sadhu, the real Guru. How do we know they're real? Because they're revealing Radharani. Prabhupada, in his preface to Srimad Bhagavatam, says that if one simply gives a careful read to this Srimad Bhagavatam, one is guaranteed. You know what guaranteed means, right? You get your money back if it doesn't work. So don't be shy to spend, you know, $300 to get your set of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Prabhupada says that by giving a careful read to the Srimad Bhagavatam, one is guaranteed to know God perfectly well. So much so that the reader will be able to defend themselves from the onslaught of atheists. And above and beyond this, the reader will be able to convince others to accept God as a concrete principle. So why, by reading Bhagavatam, we will know God perfectly well? Because Srimad Bhagavatam is revealing Ananya Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti. You can't know God, or to speak of love him, without pleasing Radharani, getting the favor of Radharani, being imbued with some Bhakti Shakti. That's why I said earlier, all these religions and spiritual paths that don't reveal the glories of Bhakti Devi, then how are you going to know God, what to speak of love him, what to seek of be saved? Right? So that's how we know we're being favored by Radharani, that we're being given the opportunity to receive the favor of Radha Krishna's devotees. That we're even in Srila Prabhupada's, you know, movement is mercy that we'll never be able to comprehend. We do not actually appreciate this incredibly rare, unique, outrageous opportunity that we are being given. We don't actually appreciate it. Anything else? Back to Daniel.
All right, Krishna. So you talked about how by receiving the favor of Radharani, one is imbued with Bhakti Shakti, or the ability to love and serve Krishna. And then oftentimes we hear reading the Shastra that love of God is always like eternally in our hearts. Like there's the verse, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunoi Shravanadi Sutta Cheti Karyo Doi. Pure love for Krishna is eternally established in the heart of living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, this love naturally awakens. What's the best way to connect or reconcile mm-hmm. those two concepts?
So different acharyas have commented on this verse, and the explanation that I found to be very harmonizing and what have you is that Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, that Krishna Prema is eternally perfect, right? And it's residing in the heart of the Nitya Bhaktas, the Ragatmikas, the perfected devotees in the spiritual world. And we, by constitution, are Dasanu 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 Das of such Ragatmika devotees, the associates of Krishna. We have full potential to love Krishna, to experience love of God. That's how you differ than the wood floor that you're sitting on. Otherwise, there's really not a difference. The difference between you and the wood floor is that you are a spirit soul, a jiva, and it's Bahiranga Shakti. So you, as a conscious entity, have full potential for being imbued with that Bhakti Shakti and reciprocating in a loving relationship with Krishna and his devotees. So that Krishna prema is nitya, it's in the hearts of the nitya siddhas. And we, as the nitya bhadas, nitya bhada means eternally conditioned souls. Bhada means like bad, we're the bad guys. So when the nitya bhada jiva takes shelter of the nitya siddha devotees, then that love manifests in the heart. Our heart, chaito darpana marjanam. Chaita means the consciousness. Chaito darpana marjanam. Darpana means mirror. Mirror. What is the contents of a mirror? What does a mirror have? As a, like a book has contents, right? This could be a travelogue. This could be a scripture. This could be a sports magazine. It has content. What's the content of a mirror? Reflection. But what's its own content? Nothing. It doesn't have any content. That painting has content, you know, whatever, a piece of art. A mirror does have no inherent content. It only reflects what you put in front of it. So if you put something ugly in front of it, then it has ugly content. You put Krishna prema in front of it, and it's got Krishna prema content. So we, the souls, are little teeny tiny minuscule, infinitesimally small mirrors, if you will. And there's a reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uses this metaphor, right? Chaito darpana marginum, that consciousness is like a mirror. Consciousness only reflects what you put in front of it. That's why our mission is to go out into the public and somehow or other, covertly, overtly, directly, indirectly, somehow or other, put Krishna in people's face, as they say, put it in their face. Somehow or other, put Krishna in their ear, in their eye, in their nose, in their mouth. Somehow or other. Because consciousness only reflects what you put in front of it. As a mirror, only reflects what you put in front of it. So if we associate with the devotees of the Lord, we associate with Radharani and her devotees, then what are we going to be? What's our heart going to be reflecting? That's what that bhakti. But you go all over here and you watch TV and you read the newspaper and, you know, mundane stuff on Facebook and, you know, blah, 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 all these things. And what's your consciousness going to reflect? You know, that's why it's like, gosh, Prabhu, you look kind of dark today. You know, you look like you're in Maya. Why are you so glum? Well, just ask, just investigate. What has that person been putting in front of their mirror? Jeto, darpana, marginum, clean the mirror. And a mirror, like you put something in front of it, and as soon as you take that thing away, it's gone, right? But this mirror, the cheta, leaves permanent, well, long-term, I should say, impressions. That's called samskara. We have samskaras from our unlimited lifetimes of mundane pursuits. Some of us hold scars, like samskar. You know, we hold scars from our childhood. You know, oh, some traumatic event happened to me in my childhood. Well, that's gone. That's ancient history. My childhood is like decades ago, but it's not in front of me anymore. It's like it's not even real because it doesn't exist. It's history. But my chaita is a mirror which holds those impressions. Unlike a mundane mirror only has that impression while that object is in front of it, and as soon as it's whisked away, the mirror again is contentless. But this mirror, the chaita, the consciousness, records those impressions. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, marjanam. We have to clean the chaita of all those samskaras, all those impressions that are very thick and deep, like black goop. It's been accumulated on our mirror for countless lifetimes. What kind of soap are you going to use to clean it? You know, a scrub brush and nothing, an atom bomb, nothing's going to clean it. It's only the holy name. Actually, all nine processes of devotional service, of course. But of the nine, Hare Nam is the most effective. So Krishna Prema is eternally perfect in the hearts of the Nitya Siddhas, and it belongs in our, it belongs, it's meant to be a permanent impression on our chaita. And then you can say it is the content of your chaita. But we have to do two things. Wash away all the garbage and put that positive impression there. They go simultaneously. You don't. It's not like you have to do two things. You don't have to turn off the light and you don't have to turn off the darkness and bring in the light. You just bring in the light, and that automatically turns off the darkness. So Prabhupada's formula is perfect. Follow the four regular principles. Associate with devotees. Take Krishna prasadam. Chant. Do some practical devotional service. Chaito darpanam arjanam. Prabhupada very much stressed this Krishna prema is inherent in the heart of the living entity, because he was trying to impress that point that it's not something to be gotten from somewhere. You don't buy it at the store. It's not a material acquisition. It's not something that's foreign to the self. It's inherent in the sense that the potential is there and it's our purpose. It's not a foreign, you know, because there's a lot of Mayavadis and personalists who want to say that you guys who do all this Krishna prema stuff, that's an artificial imposition on the self, because you're supposed to just get down to the naked mirror, contentlessness. That's the real soul, contentlessness. And you guys who put all those Krishna prema samskaras on there, that's all nice and everything, but it's not the just stripped down naked soul, you know? So we do stress this point when we're preaching, that Krishna prema, that potential is inherent in all. It's meant to be there. Okay, anything else? We've gone a little over time. Jitendriya Prabhu will take the last comment here.
What do they say, the big four and the sweet 16? Another thing is supervisors superimposing their demands upon you. But I like the word sudravisors. Keep us in place. Kowtow. Prabhupada uses the word kowtow to the big dogs, did he say? Did he used to say that? Kowtow to the big dogs. But anyways, thank you.
Okay, we'll stop there. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.